Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Kat, and this is Murderfy, a true crime and paranormal podcast. So excited to be here with you all today talking about one of my favorite topics, true crime. I've always been obsessed with the macabre and the darker side of life ever since I was a little girl. I remember so vividly staying at my grandparents' house when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and they had this huge bookshelf that went across the whole lounge room wall. But one book in particular caught my eye, and it was called something like Australian True Crime or True Crime Down Under, and I remember begging my grandparents to let me read it, but of course they said, you might be a bit too young for that book, because let's face it, I probably was. But I was also the youngest kid in my family, and I was pretty defiant, so of course while my grandparents were asleep, I'd sneak out of my room and sneakily read the book at night. And from then on, I was absolutely hooked and I wanted to know more and more. And a couple of decades later, nothing's changed. So what better way to share my obsession with you all than to start this podcast? So today I'm going to be talking about a case that I actually only heard about earlier this year from Ash and Elena on the Morbid podcast, who did such an amazing job of covering this case. So please go and check that one out if you haven't already. When I first heard about this case, I was literally in tears, which really is not something that happens very often. If you know me, I really don't get too emotional about anything at all. But man, this one really just made me feel a lot of feelings. So I definitely need to share this one with you all. So today I'm going to be covering the case of Chanda Shara. We're going back to 1992, when Chanda Shara was a 12-year-old girl who had moved to New Albany, Indiana, from Kentucky. She moved to Indiana with her mother after her parents separated, but her father also moved to a town nearby, also in Indiana, called Jeffersonville, so he could still be close to Chanda and she could grow up having a relationship with both of her parents. So very mature, wonderful, caring parents who really left their daughter out of their separation as much as possible. When Chanda moved to Indiana, she started to attend Hazelwood Middle School, where, by all accounts, she made friends really easily. Her classmates and teachers all liked her, and she was just one of those sweet, happy, positive people to have around. It was at Hazelwood Middle School that Chanda became friends with a classmate named Amanda Heavren, who at the time was 15 years old. The girls grew a really close bond really quickly and soon started dating one another, but there was a problem. Amanda was previously dating another classmate named Melinda Lovelace, who was also 15 years old. And Melinda was kind of known as the school bully. Now, a bit of background about Melinda. So Melinda has kind of the exact opposite personality and upbringing as to what Chanda has. Chanda has a very caring, secure, nurturing support system at home, despite her parents being separated, while Melinda is being raised in a home where there are reports of rape, sodomy, and sexual battery towards not only herself, but her sisters and her mother. Now, that doesn't excuse anything at all that Melinda will go on to do, but it's worth mentioning even just for the nature versus nurture argument, you know, that old chestnut. So when Melinda finds out that Amanda has moved on and is now dating Chanda, she doesn't take this information lightly, to say the least. Melinda starts to speak publicly around the school and at school dances, saying that she wanted to kill Chanda, and even wrote letters to Amanda that contained death threats towards Chanda. Amanda reportedly even gave these letters to a youth prosecutor at the time, but unfortunately, the prosecutor didn't follow up with them and nothing was done. if it's true that Amanda had provided these letters to a prosecutor, maybe if something was done with the letters and someone was keeping a closer eye on Melinda at the time, maybe this whole thing could have been avoided, but we just don't know. And obviously hindsight is 2020. And it's also the early 90s, so things weren't taken as seriously as they are nowadays. So Melinda continues with this behavior towards Shanda and Amanda, and even confronts them both at a school dance the girls attended together, where she threatened to kill Shanda to her face. Now, this is a 12-year-old girl who was being threatened by an older, bigger girl, so she's probably really scared of her. I mean, I definitely would be if I was in her shoes. So Shanda obviously tells her parents about what's going on because, you know, she's close with her parents and she's scared because her life is being threatened. And they're really supportive and take this whole thing really seriously and remove her immediately from Hazelwood Middle School and enroll her into a new school, Our Lady of Perpetual Help Catholic School, which is still in Indiana, so she's still in the area, because her parents don't think that they need to uproot their entire life again. Because why would you think that? You would think that moving schools to get away from the bullying would help, which it does for a little while. And again, this is the early 90s. It's not like today where kids that are being bullied don't get a break because the internet is so easily accessible. Once you've moved schools, the only other way someone can bully you is by coming to your house or writing you a letter. So times are a bit more simple as far as bullying goes back then. So her parents really think that they're doing the right thing. So Shanda and Amanda are still dating even though Shanda's moved schools because, you know, they're young, they're in love. We've all been there. This is where I'm going to put in a warning for you guys, because this is when it's going to start to get a bit dark. So take that as you will, because we've now come to the night of Friday, the 10th of January, 1992. Melinda is at her house when her friend Laurie Tackett, who's 17 years old at the time, visits Melinda with her two friends, Hope Rippey and Tony Lawrence, who are both 15 years old and were just meeting Melinda for the first time. The four girls are all hanging out at Melinda's house when Melinda brings out a knife to show the other girls and says to them that she'd love to go and scare a girl named Shanda with it because, and I quote, "she's a copycat and she stole my girlfriend," and wonders if the other girls would like to join her, to which they respond that they do. Laurie has reportedly even been known to say prior to this event that she always wondered what it would be like to kill somebody. And just keep in mind, none of these girls aside from Melinda had ever even met or heard about Shanda until now. And I'm just going to quickly put in here that if someone you know says to you, "do you want to go scare a child with this weapon I have?" instead of just going along with it, maybe just pull that person aside really quick and just see what's going on with them. See if they're actually okay, because that's not normal behavior and it's not something you should go along with. So Melinda, Laurie, Hope and Tony all get into Laurie's car and drive about 10 minutes to where Shanda's staying at her father's house in Jeffersonville. When the girls arrive at Shanda's house, Melinda tells Tony and Hope to go knock on Shanda's front door and to tell Shanda that they are friends of Shanda's girlfriend, Amanda, and to tell Shanda that Amanda is waiting for them at Mistletoe Falls at the witch's house. Now, I know the name the witch's house might raise some red flags, but it's basically castle ruins that the locals in the area believe to be haunted. But teenagers will hang out there to smoke and drink and just use it as a way to get away from their parents and hang out with their friends, which I feel like every town has somewhere like this. So it doesn't raise a lot of red flags when the girls suggest to take Shanda there, at least to Shanda, because she knows that her classmates hang out there and do, you know, teenage stuff. It's not a big deal. And Melinda does come up with this plan because she knows that Shanda won't get in the car if she sees that Melinda is there, because obviously Shanda's really scared of Melinda. So Tony and Hope tell Shanda that if she gets in the car with them, they'll all drive to Mistletoe Falls together to go see Amanda, which obviously now is a lie. I just want to put this out there straight away to clear up any confusion in the rest of the story. Amanda had absolutely nothing to do with this. It was simply a lie that Hope and Tony told Shanda to get her out of the house. Now, because Shanda, again, is 12 years old, she believes the girls, but she says that because her dad and stepmom are awake, they won't let her leave with them. But that if they come back at midnight, she'd sneak out of the house while her parents were asleep and they could go see her girlfriend at Mistletoe Falls. Hope and Tony leave Shanda's house and get back into the car where Melinda and Laurie are waiting. When Melinda notices that Shanda isn't with them, she loses it. She's furious that Shanda didn't come with them, which is a massive red flag in my opinion. But once Hope and Tony explain that they'll go back to Shanda's at midnight so they can help her sneak out, Melinda calms down and suggests that they drive to a nearby town, Louisville, and go to a gig there to kill some time until midnight. It's now Saturday, the 11th of January, 1992, and it's around 12:30 a.m. that the girls return to Shanda's house. But this time, Laurie and Hope go to help sneak Shanda out of the house, while Melinda and Tony wait in the car. Melinda then hides herself under a blanket in the back seat with the knife she had shown the girls earlier in the night. Laurie, Hope, and Shanda get back into the car where Melinda and Tony are waiting and begin the journey to Mistletoe Falls. Once Laurie begins driving, Melinda springs up from under the blanket in the back seat and starts interrogating Shanda about her relationship with Amanda while holding a knife to Shanda's throat. This interrogation continues while they drive a sobbing Shanda towards Mistletoe Falls. Once they arrive, they lead Shanda into the witch's house, where they tie her arms and legs together with rope, while all four girls begin to taunt, tease, and threaten her. At one stage, one of them telling her she wouldn't look so pretty if they cut off her hair. Which maybe you're thinking, it's not a big deal, it's just hair, it'll grow back. Think about it from this perspective. You're 12 years old. Four older girls have come to your home and put you in their car, held a knife to your throat, tied you up and have driven you to this abandoned spot in the woods in the middle of the night. And one of the girls that's doing all this to you has been threatening to kill you for the past few months. So if you think about this from Shanda's perspective, it's horrifying. At one stage, Melinda takes off the rings that Shanda always wears and gives one to each of the girls, which to me almost seems like Melinda is sort of thinking of these rings like a bit of a trophy, but that's just my opinion. So that may be the case, that might not be the case, I'm not sure. After terrorizing Shanda in the witch's house for about an hour, Laurie goes back out to her car and grabs an old t-shirt that's lying in the car. She lights it on fire, but then immediately tells the other three girls that they need to leave because she's afraid the fire will attract unwanted attention. So they put a steel-bound Shanda into the trunk and drive about an hour towards a dense wooded area near Laurie's home in Madison. Once they get to the wooded area, Hope and Tony say that they're scared of the dark woods and that they want to stay in the car. So Melinda and Laurie lead Shanda to a garbage dump near a logging road in a denser part of the woods where they make her strip naked and begin to beat her. Melinda starts to get tired of beating Shanda and tries to cut Shanda's throat with a knife, but the knife was actually too dull to go through. So Melinda and Laurie start to take turns stabbing Shanda in the chest and strangling her with rope until she falls unconscious. Once Shanda was unconscious, Melinda and Laurie dragged her back to the car where they put her back into the trunk and told Hope and Tony that she was dead. The girls then drove to Laurie's home nearby where they cleaned themselves up, drank soda and read each other's runestones. After a while of doing this, they begin to hear Shanda screaming from the trunk. So Laurie picks up a knife from the kitchen and goes out to the trunk where she stabs Shanda several more times, before coming back into the house a few minutes later, covered in Shanda's blood. After spending some more time at Laurie's house, Melinda and Laurie are getting bored and they decide to go for a country drive to a nearby town, Canaan, while Hope and Tony decide to stay back at Laurie's house. While Melinda and Laurie are driving around, they begin to hear Shanda crying from the trunk. Laurie stops the car, opens the trunk, and begins to beat Shanda with a tire iron until she falls silent. When Laurie gets back into the car to continue driving, she tells Melinda to smell it, referring to the tire iron covered in Shanda's blood, which just, ugh, what a piece of shit. I mean, all these girls are really, but for some reason, that little detail just makes me so angry. After driving around for a couple of hours, the sun is slowly starting to rise, and Melinda and Laurie decide to head back to Laurie's house, where Hope and Tony are still waiting. Once they arrive back at Laurie's, they start to laughingly describe the continued torture of Shanda to Hope and Tony, when Laurie's mother is awoken by their laughter. Now, remember, these girls are all teenagers, so Laurie's mum is pissed that she's been woken up by them early in the morning when she didn't even know these girls were at her house. And because she's pissed, she kicks the girls out and tells Laurie to drive them all home. The four girls all get back into Laurie's car to be driven home, with Shanda still in the trunk. Now, keep in mind, Shanda's been in that trunk for coming up to a total of 9 hours now, and has been savagely beaten and tortured, but she is amazingly still alive. She's unable to move due to her injuries, but she's still alive. Laurie starts to drive the girls home, but before dropping any of them off, she stops off at a gas station to buy a tank full of gas and a 2-liter bottle of Pepsi. She pours out the Pepsi and refills the empty bottle with gasoline. Laurie drives the girls to a rarely used gravel road off Route 421. Once they arrive, Laurie and Hope wrap Shanda in an old blanket and carry her to a field by the gravel road. Now, I am about to ruin your day with this sentence, but it needs to be said. Hope starts to pour the gasoline from the Pepsi bottle on Shanda and then sets her on fire. One of the girls has even said previously that they watched as Shanda's hand clasped around the blanket while this was happening. So she was definitely still alive. The girls leave the scene, but Melinda isn't convinced that Shanda's dead. So they return, and when they do, they pour the rest of the gasoline left in the bottle on Shanda and watch as her body burns. When the four girls finally leave the scene, leaving Shanda alone in that field, they went to a local McDonald's for breakfast, where they were heard laughing and joking about the murder they'd just committed. Tony even phoned a friend to talk about it, and honestly, go fuck yourself. Don't call the police. No, that would be silly. Call a friend and talk about how cool you all are. Yeah, well done. All right, so once they were done eating breakfast, Laurie dropped Hope and Tony off at their homes and returned to her own home with Melinda. So Melinda and Laurie are now hanging out at Laurie's house again when they decide to call Shanda's girlfriend, Melinda's ex-girlfriend, Amanda, to ask if she wants to hang out with them. It's then that a friend of Melinda's, Crystal Wathen, visits Melinda and Laurie at Laurie's home and decides to take a drive with them to go and pick up Amanda. So Melinda, Laurie, and this new girl, Crystal, go to collect Amanda and return back to Laurie's house to spend the day together. The whole drive back to Laurie's, Melinda and Laurie, being the assholes they are bragging about the murder of Shanda to Crystal and Amanda. And of course these girls don't believe a word they're saying. Why would you? You just think it's teenage girls talking shit. But this all changes when they get to Laurie's. When Laurie opens the trunk to reveal bloody handprints covering the whole interior and a bloody pair of socks. So understandably, Amanda is absolutely horrified at what she's seeing and asks Laurie to take her home, which she actually does. But when they get back to Amanda's house, Melinda kisses Amanda and begs her not to tell anyone about what she saw. And Amanda tells her she won't, because to be honest, she's probably fearing for her life if she does tell someone. But still, if you see some horrific shit like this, please just say something to someone. Don't fall into the trap of the bystander effect of someone else will do it, because they might not. While all of this is happening on one side of town, Shanda's family are desperately trying to find her after noticing she wasn't in her room. Shanda's mum and dad are calling friends, family, neighbours, everyone. And when they come up empty, they file a missing persons report with the police. at the same time, two brothers are hiking down a gravel road off Route 421 to go hunting when they notice a body in the field by the road. The brothers call the police straight away to report it and stick around until the police arrive to declare the area a crime scene. But when the police arrive, they obviously can't identify the body straight away because it's so severely burned. So it obviously turns into a open investigation. We're now at the night of Saturday, the 11th of January, 1992, when Hope and Tony come barreling into the police station with their parents. The girls are crying hysterically and talking about a girl that they refer to as Shanda, while they describe the events from the night before and that morning. It's at this stage they also tell the police about the other girls involved, obviously being Melinda and Laurie. With the confessions obtained by Hope and Tony, police were able to match the dental records from the body found off Route 421 to Shanda's missing persons report. Once police had confirmed that the body found was that of Shanda, Melinda and Laurie were arrested immediately and all four girls were sent to trial. At the trial, all four girls were tried as adults and all four girls also accepted plea bargains to avoid the death penalty, with Melinda, Laurie and Hope all being sentenced to 60 years and Tony being sentenced to 20 years. Tony was released December 2000 after serving 9 years, but remained on parole until December 2002. Hope was released April 2006 after serving 14 years, but remained on supervised parole until April 2011. Laurie was released January 2018 after serving 26 years and completed an additional year of parole. Melinda was released September 2019 after also serving 26 years and is currently on parole in Kentucky, which, if you remember, is where Shanda was originally from before her family moved to Indiana. And just seems like such a kick in the guts that this fucking ingrown toenail of a woman is walking the same streets that Shanda grew up in. While in prison, Melinda started working in a prison program that trains and provides service dogs to people with disabilities. And in 2012, Shanda's mother, Jackie Vaught, actually donated a dog named Angel in Shanda's name directly to Melinda for Melinda to train, and went on to say this about the decision. "It's my choice to make. Shanda is my child. If you don't let good things come from bad things, nothing gets better. And I know what my child would want. My child would want this." And that is the case of Shanda Shara. I know it was a heavy one, especially to start with, but like I said earlier in the episode, I feel as though not enough people know about this one, and Shanda's memory deserves to be remembered. And if you or anyone you know is being bullied or just needs to talk to someone to get things off your chest, there are some amazing resources you can contact. If you're located in Australia, like me, you can contact Lifeline on 13 11 14, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you're located in the UK, you can contact Samaritans on 116 123, again, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if you're located in the US, you can contact Stomp Out Bullying on 1-800-273-8255. Also 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And honestly, just check on those you love. I would love to know what you think of this episode. And if you have any suggestions for future episodes, or you just want to reach out and say hi, send me an email at murderfypod@gmail.com. That's murderfypod. Follow me on Instagram at MurderFiPod, and most importantly, please like, rate and review on whatever app you're listening to me on. I'll also post these links and any additional info in the show notes so you can find everything there if you need. Well, keep your eyes and ears peeled for next week's episode. I'll post a hint on my Insta during the week, so if you go over there and follow me, you could try to guess what I will be covering. Well, thank you for listening and stay spooky, my friends. I'll see you next week.
Bye.
Well, thank you for listening and stay spooky, my friends. I'll see you next week. Bye.